Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Toby Football Show, European edition. Today, Xavi quits. We talk the crisis in Catalonia and who Barca will choose for their after Xavi. Also, Klopp stop, the Deutsche Reaktion, Bayern back in title race, countdown to Il Derby d'Italia, Inter Juventus, can it live up to Lazio Napoli? And drawing with breasts leaves Luis Enrique red-faced like a schoolboy at a gallery. It's all in the Totally Football Show. It's Tuesday, the 30th of January, and you're tuned to the sweet sound of the Totally Football Show European edition with James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Hi, James. Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, James.
Hola, Alvaro. And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
No Rafa.
No Rafa today.
No Rafa yet, because he's in an airport right now.
Okay, he's going to appear later.
Yeah, we'll be speaking to him very, very shortly. He's on his way to Austria. Alvaro, Do you have a good weekend?
A very good weekend, yeah. A quiet one. And then
quiet one.
I was working on Monday interviewing Andoni Iraola.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What, was he nice?
A very nice character. Loving the experience in the UK. A family man. He didn't want to come to the country without making sure that everything was set for his kids, school and all that. And I also learned that he's a very big fan of American football.
American football.
Yes, because he spent a lot of time, a couple of years in the United States, and he became a fan. Oh. And I think that he's a man suited for the world of management completely. He
speaks in the NFL.
In the that would be funny. Even though he knows a lot, you will be surprised, really. Mm. He was asked about the Super Bowl final and all that, and he helped previewing the game. But yeah, generally speaking, a really nice guy. I was talking to him 30 minutes after the interview. And
did you speak in Basque or in Spanish?
No, in Spanish. My Basque is not so good anymore. And you know, I found him a very, very interesting character. Yeah, probably excellent. I confirmed my expectations about him.
All right. No question. You had the busiest weekend, blowing up in our mentions.
Yeah.
James, you're well?
Yeah, very good. Still intact.
Still intact. Jules?
Just about.
All good?
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Nice. Moments of the weekend. Now, Rafa's done one already, and we'll hear that later on. Okay. But Jules, how about you?
I think, James, a lot of things happened this weekend that I think will stay where they happened. But otherwise...
How much football did you watch this weekend? To be fair, Jules...
To be fair.
You watched more, your handball final. That's going to be the...
That goal in the semi-finals.
The free kick.
Listen to those two experts in handball, because handball is big in Spain too, in France and in Germany.
Okay, so we watched the handball semi-final.
Yeah.
France against, I forget who it was.
Sweden.
The
Swedish keeper. Yeah. By the way, he plays for PSG.
Palinkovic, my man.
Yeah. Paliska, my man. Yeah. Anyway, so what's your moment of the week, Jules?
It could have been Prandi's shot in that semi-final.
It was amazing.
But it's not. And what happened in Zermatt obviously stays in Zermatt. So I will go for André Ayew. Remember him?
Yes.
Swansea legend, West Ham not so much legend, who scored an overhead kick, like a kind of a fake one. You know, it's not a Garnacho type of overhead kick, because one of his legs is still on the floor, but he still hit the ball backwards over his head and over the keeper to make it 3-3 in a very thrilling Lorient-Ville-Le Havre game.
Okay, quiet weekend in France then. James, your moment of the weekend?
I mean, you mentioned it in your intro, James.
Did I?
Lazio-Napoli.
Thriller.
Was it the shot on target?
which happened in the 75th minute, I think. Yeah, a great advert for Serie A.
Serie A is back.
Walter Mazzarri, the Napoli coach, back after 10 years. Do you know those, I suppose if you're watching a National Geographic documentary where they show like the ages of time, you know, like the kind of Jurassic period, Paleolithic period and that sort of thing. I think his approach to this game was to do that, but like go backwards. So it was to like add another defender, add another defender. Is there a libero? Come on. It's just like, so started with a back three, which became a four, became a five, became a six, became a seven.
You got a point. That, I mean, last season we recorded Napoli possibly the most exciting team to watch Europe.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. I mean, you have to salute their ability to transform into quite the dullest.
Yeah. The regression is, I think they haven't scored in something like seven of their last 10 games or something like that. It's remarkable. I mean, I know Osimhen is away in the African Cup of Nations, but even when he was
force.
Exactly, even when he was injured this season and particularly last, Raspadori would score, Simeone would score.
Kvara.
So, yeah, and they've just been signing players who were going to get relegated with Verona, Nonge and Dendonca, who's obviously not come from Verona, but there you go.
Alvaro?
Yeah, my one comes from Monday. Because it happened during Getafe, Granada. Do you remember Borja Mayoral?
Of course.
Played for Roma. Yeah. He was good for a season. He scored about 16 goals, 17 in one season in all competitions with Roma.
Yeah.
Until Jose Mourinho arrived and then he didn't want him there.
Bodo Glimt. He was one of the Bodo Glimt boys
But he has rediscovered his best form in Spain. And we have spoken about Jude Bellingham for obvious reasons, Artem Dobik as well, both joint top scorers of La Liga. But there is more merit in Borja Mayoral scoring the same amount of goals, because with his goal against Granada, he's got 14 under his belt as well, because Getafe is 10th in La Liga. Mm. And Borja Mayoral just going to the top scoring list, the top in the charts with players of that quality is quite something, because especially he does it for Getafe, and he has scored the 50% of the goals of the team.
And Mason Greenwood also scored in that game, by the way.
Controversies. Mason Greenwood. By the way, you were talking about Andre Ayew's overhead kick or semi-overhead kick. Have you seen from Serie C, Girone A, FM Reserves, the incredible Michael Liguori?
When you said Girone, then I was like, Girona.
So he plays for Padova.
Okay.
And this weekend, they were away at Novara, and he scores. It's just one of the you're looking for an heir to the Quagliarella throne for overhead kicks.
Yeah.
This is the guy, Liguori.
Yeah.
Liguori, I think he's about 25, 26, plays in Serie C, which is kind of their Liga Pro, third division kind of thing, And he's done a couple of, he had one in the derby with Triestina back in December. I had not come across this guy, but someone flagged him up.
Yeah.
You go back, look, check out the one this weekend, Alvaro. You're doing this right now, aren't you?
Are you looking?
Padova at Novara. So Novara, Padova. And it was a 3-0 win, and his goal, boom.
Oh, he's good.
These are my favorite.
Yeah.
So this is not an overhead kick, though. We agree.
That's a
scissor kick.
It's a sforbiciata.
Yeah, because
but
he's on his
over
side.
His head.
No, he's
it's
on the
over
side.
His head.
No.
Let's check out the replay, Jules, my man.
Here.
Okay, there he is celebrating.
Yeah, look.
Okay.
He's on his
boom.
Side.
Boom.
He's on his side.
It's not. All right. Listen, I invite you to check it out. It's from the Novara Padova game.
Look at where his body's positioned.
Anyway, it's
remarkable.
Sexy
well done, Michael.
As heck.
Mm. Also, because the ball drops from like a similar height to, let's say, Zidane's volley against Leverkusen.
Oh, yeah.
So you are just watching the ball for about 1.5 seconds, maybe. Mm.
Like the Cristiano one, which is, I think, in recent years, the one.
Really? More than Bale?
Yeah, I think Bale shins it. Cristiano is just so
aesthetically
perfect.
Aesthetically, Cristiano is better, right?
Is it? And what is called like overhead, because the ball goes up, but also your legs, the motion of your legs, one goes up and then you hit it with one over your head.
Yeah.
Which is not what Bale does, for example. Bale just throws his left leg up and the ball goes back him, backwards, if you see what I mean.
Uh-huh.
Well, with the Cristiano one, the ball is so high, so quick.
Yeah.
James is right on this one. It's a beautiful, beautiful goal, but he has the time to see the ball. Nobody is marking him, and he's not even with the goal to his back.
Yeah.
So
just saying, though, that's the kind of thing. Even in Serie C, that's the kind of talent you find.
No, that's incredible.
Italy. So rich in goal scoring.
Spalletti, call him up.
Yeah.
On bicycle kicks, maybe Cristiano's one is the nicest, but the most difficult for me, there is no debate here, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic
against England.
In terms of difficulty and the power he had to put on the ball, that was incredible.
I mean, we could just now introduce Quagliarella and his body of work.
True.
Yeah, anyway, let's move on. Hey, Alvaro, you're up first with La Liga.
Let's go.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Gonzalo Guedes.
Guedes y Sorloth para volverlos locos a todos. Sigue Guedes, llega solo Morales, controla, punto de penalti, gol, 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 gol.
Xavi is stepping down at Barcelona. It's a common sense decision for the good of the club, said the manager, emerging after some hours of discussion post the Catalans' 5-3 defeat at home this weekend to Villarreal. The first time ever, I believe, in more than 60 years that they've conceded five goals at home. A disastrous game, a disastrous start to the year. And so he's going to leave at the end of the season.
He's going to leave at the end of the season. If not earlier, because you never know. You never know if the results keep on being like this. Barcelona has conceded 19 goals in January. 1-9.
So they got beaten 4-1 by Real in the Super Cup final. Yeah. They got beaten 4-2 by your friends Athletic in the Copa del Rey. Now this 5-3 previously. They're 11 points behind Girona, who beat them 4-2.
They're playing Serie C.
Everything's done. There's nothing left to play for?
The Champions League. Obviously.
Of course, the Champions League. Well, they're playing Napoli.
Great game, that.
They're playing. You cannot count on. I mean, you can think that Barcelona has a chance against Napoli because Napoli are where they are. Mm. But then, as soon as a difficult draw comes for Barcelona, I don't think they'll be up to the challenge, really, because they collapse in every game. They don't control the game. They don't control it. But sometimes not controlling the game is something that teams are happy with. I can think of Atletico or Real Madrid at times. They are not in control of the possession, but they know what they are doing, and their box is very safe.
They control the space.
They control it, yeah. Maybe not in the way you would define controlling, you know, the game, but they do it because they don't lose the plot, but Barcelona does. And against Villarreal, when they scored the 3-2,
So Villarreal went 2-0 up, and then Barcelona had 11 minutes when they scored three goals. And then at the end, they just fell apart.
They fell apart. Gonzalo Guedes scoring his first goal for Villarreal. Then Sorloth, Morales, they scored the fourth and the fifth. Maybe not in that order, but I think that Barcelona's collapse was clear. And, you know, the game gave us a hint of what was going to happen afterwards, because when the game was 3-3 and Gundogan produced a shot in the box, the referee called penalty because a Villarreal defender touched the ball with his elbow, but his elbow was basically pasted, glued to his ribs. And the referee went to the VAR video and he turned down his decision and he said that that was not penalty. Right after that, Xavi started shouting at the camera, "This is a real embarrassment. This is a disgrace," a few times. So Xavi was not himself. At all. And
he looked like Maradona in 1994 when he kind of found the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. But Maradona did it after scoring.
Yeah. And after other things.
Xavi, you know, little by little, gradually, he's been...
Poor chap. I mean, I feel bad. I know that you said his football's boring, but he joined the club when he was 11?
Yeah.
And he was 17 years in the first team, come back, won them the league last season when we all remember how they'd been with the Dutch guy.
Yeah. And signed a new contract in September. He had a new deal in September. Can you imagine between September and January from committing your future to the club and then deciding to leave? Things that must have gone really, really bad in the space of 4 months.
Is it to do with Deco, the sporting director?
It's got to do with a number of things. Number one, being the Barcelona manager this time is difficult because... sometimes we take as normal things that have happened in the previous summers. For example, Xavi calling Gundogan on the phone to tell him to join Barcelona. Xavi calling Bernardo Silva or pretending to call him, not knowing whether they could sign that player or not. Because Barcelona has these financial issues. Has these financial issues and Xavi knows about them. And he has lost allies in the club. Jordi Cruyff left. Matteo Alemany, a great sporting director, left as well. Then Deco apparently is not the kind of guy that Xavi has a great relationship with right now. So little by little, he's been feeling more and more lonely and isolated. And I know that his brother is his assistant coach. But still, there is a lot to take on. It looks like Xavi is not comfortable in a conflict situation. You can see some other managers just profiting from it. Simeone, Mourinho, they know how to communicate in this kind of situations, how to deal with this. Xavi hasn't been able. The results weren't going his way, that's for sure. especially this season. Then there was a turning point, in my opinion, this season as well. After losing against Girona, Xavi decided not to take a few important players to the game against Antwerp in the Champions League. And Joan Laporta told him that he had to bring those big players to that game in Belgium. Mm. So that undermines...
Which they lost.
They lost. Already qualified and top in the group.
For example, that undermines Xavi's authority completely. And that was a point of no return. Ever since then, Barcelona has been losing games. I think that the players have a lot of responsibility as well, but Xavi, the manager, as well.
Because it's a good squad. I mean, they're currently fourth now behind Atletico on goal difference, but I mean, they have good players. I mean, you look at some of their goal-scoring talent they've got. Gundogan, you mentioned Lewandowski, João Félix coming in.
João Félix, I think... emphasizes a lot of what we're talking about. This is Deco's choice. It's not Xavi's choice. And Alvaro had said many times before he joined that Xavi didn't want him there. And yeah, he started well and at times he's got a good moment because he's a very good player. That's not the problem here. And I think a lot of people underestimate the relationship between a sporting director and a coach, or even a president or an owner, whatever, a sporting director and a manager. And we talked a lot, and it sounds a bit like a cliche, that sporting director and manager have to be on the same page. If they're not, there's trouble ahead. And we've seen it many, many times happen. And it's exactly the case here. Whether it's enough for Xavi to quit, I'm not sure really. But if you don't get on with your sporting director, but it's a bit the same in any job. If you don't get on with your boss, there's a point where you think like, well, I'm not having that anymore.
Exactly. That's why we're so lucky with producer Charlie.
Yeah. thing with Xavi is that I do believe that he's very dogmatic and he believes that his way is the way. He was like that as a player and he's like this as a manager as well. I don't think that he's taking on criticism very well. That's number one. Then his communicative skills are not perfect. I think that he's got some problems with that. His messages are contradictory. I don't think that his message is reaching the players the right way. He's not a great motivator. So there are a number of things that they are under Xavi's belt, and you have to put them to him. And then, you know, Joan Laporta, even though he loved Xavi as a person and he really likes Xavi as a footballer, I think that he was never too convinced about Xavi as the manager because it took him a lot of time to sign him when it was clear that Ronald Koeman was not the right manager for Barcelona because Laporta had his doubts. Then he extended his contract because, yes, Xavi won the league. But as soon as the results weren't good, he started just taking part in Xavi's decisions. The list against Antwerp was the ultimate example of that. And I think that the situation after that went from bad to worse.
Okay, this is a club with massive pressure, massive expectations, a massively mortgaged future, financially speaking. Who are they likely to be able to get? Who do you think they're looking to get in?
Well, the most obvious replacement, if it's going to be, if it was tomorrow, let's say that Xavi loses the next four games, it would be Rafa Márquez because he's there. He's at Barcelona B. He's at the academy. And Rafa Márquez, clumsily, in my opinion, he replied on Saturday after getting to know that Xavi was going to leave at the end of the season. He said literally, if I get my chance, I won't say no. I think that maybe he would have...
Threw his hat in the ring.
He could have been a little bit more respectful or, you know, caring with Xavi. Then Thiago Motta, who has
Siding
said...
up to the widow at the...
A little bit like that, Thiago Motta, he's a manager of Bologna, good friends with Deco. Deco would like Thiago Motta as well to be one of the candidates, but Thiago Motta, he said that he was fine where he is, which is a normal thing to say in these circumstances. And then it will depend a lot on, number one, who Laporta decides to replace Xavi with, because I think that Deco has a big call in here. Laporta has been a president, at least in his first stint, that didn't change the manager unless it was totally necessary. He got only two, Guardiola and Frank Rijkaard, in 7 years, which is fine.
When one of the managers...
And there's no money either.
But there is no money, and this is very important. Everything we say about Barcelona cannot be devoid of that context. Today I was reading in Relevo, which is a Spanish sport newspaper, and a very good one, by the way, that if Barcelona sacked Xavi today, they would have only 2.7 million to appoint a new coach and 2.7 million to use on the coach and the coaching staff. That's not a lot of money. Top manager doesn't accept such a little salary.
And someone like, I don't know, could we put a figure on what someone like a Motta and his coaching staff would cost?
well, clearly more than 2.7 million.
Yeah, massively. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah,
we expect around gross.
But the context is important again because these are Barcelona's financial issues, and then there is La Liga Cup, La Liga Salary Cup. Some other leagues, they don't have this. But in La Liga, you have to abide to this because Javier Tebas wants it that way. So Barcelona, basically, they want to sack Xavi now if they wanted, and I think that Laporta would like to if it wasn't for the financial difficulties and the financial compromise that this would mean for Barcelona, he would have done it. But Barcelona cannot do it right now. So Xavi has to stay until the end of the season, despite him having said that he doesn't have the energy to continue another season.
Wow.
Why does he have the energy to continue now and not for another season? Really, and Joan Laporta has made this decision knowing that there is a manager who is jaded, who is tired, who has been eaten and devoured by the whole situation, and yet he's going to stay because Barcelona cannot sack him. They don't have the money for that.
Unless, presumably, if Rafa Marquez steps up from B, that wouldn't involve the same kind of financial input, yeah, because he's already on the books to some extent.
But Rafa Marquez is not covering himself in glory either in Barcelona B. He's not doing anything extraordinary.
Could be a total meltdown in Catalonia. That's what you're saying over the last few months of the season. And for a club like Athletic, only 2 points, is it, off the Champions League positions?
Well, that's the most important thing for Barcelona. Yeah, qualifying for the Champions
League. Might not make the top four.
And you wonder the impact on, you know, you can look at club because it's the same weekend, and that could have a boost massively on the Liverpool players and want to finish on a high this season because of club, etc., etc. For Xavi, it could be the other way around. And there was Lewandowski had a big barbecue in his house yesterday, and Xavi and the backroom staff didn't go. I don't know if they were not invited or if they were invited and they felt let the players be together. It's just like if we were going for a raclette somewhere, and you did.
If you guys went skiing and the jefe wasn't there.
What kind of impact would that have?
Exactly. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be part of that. What kind of meltdown for the rest of the season?
Exactly. Not a big support to Xavi in social media by the players, by the way. Of course, because he's staying until, on paper, 30th of June, and maybe when he leaves, the players will show respect to the man. But only Gavi and Pedri, as far as I can recall, have sent a message to Xavi.
No.
So, you know, I'm not saying that he has lost the dressing room because I'm not in the position to say this.
But
I can tell you as well that for some players that have come from really big winning cultures like Gundogan and Lewandowski to arrive in Barcelona and see all this and the mismanagement in coaching and a club that can barely pay salaries and a club that can barely make signings without having to abide La Liga's financial fair play, that has to be really strange to see. So I think the situation is going to be difficult, mainly because Real Madrid is going to keep on winning. This is something that we have to remember. Barcelona has been always in turmoil, always, over the last 10 years, for many reasons, because Guardiola departed and he shouldn't have, because then Bartomeu was doing his terrible financial decisions, because Neymar left, but they were winning.
When they signed Coutinho, they handed all that glory over to the money, and the glory went to Liverpool. Liverpool rise went up.
Yeah.
Barcelona's down.
Who has been the best president in the history of Real Madrid, Alvaro? Is it Santiago Bernabeu? Is it Florentino Perez? Or is it José Bartomeu?
That's a good question. I think Bartomeu did a massive favor to Real Madrid, that's for sure. Just ruining the legacy that Messi, Neymar and Suarez could have created. But I think that Joan Laporta shouldn't be forgotten here because he's been already 3 years as a president of Barcelona. He plotted this Leavers thing that has worked somehow because Barcelona has been able to create it. Yeah, because they created the squad that won them the league. And
but look at where they are now. The manager can make top four.
The thing that he hasn't done has been refinancing the debt. Barcelona's debt is still 1.3 billion, the same debt that Laporta inherited. He hasn't done enough to revert all that.
Okay, but Bartomeu also involved in this legal action over the amount of money that Barcelona paid to the vice president of the Referees Association.
Bartomeu is involved in that, but Barcelona, but Laporta started all this.
Right.
He was the one that who was there in the 2000s, in the early 2000s.
So if they miss out on Champions League, what do you reckon the direction of travel is, Alvaro? We talk about clubs being too big to fail. You look at the finances that Barcelona have got and you think, how is this sustainable? So, yeah, what is the worst case scenario if they miss out in the Champions League?
I would say that partially, Barcelona is already a normal company because Goldman Sachs has given them plenty of loans and Barcelona has to repay them.
Mm.
And
they mortgage their TV revenue, which I imagine must be influenced by
25%.
Must have Champions League factored in there.
So Barcelona is also dependent on the investors that have helped the club come out from, at least slightly, from the financial mess they are in.
Right.
So I would say that Barcelona doesn't work normally, like, for example, like a socios team, like Athletic Club Bilbao does, because Athletic Club Bilbao is a socios club as well.
Mm.
But we don't have so much dependence on investors who have helped Barcelona to come out from their financial crisis, at least for a little while. So the future for Barcelona looks, of course, challenging. It's a mystery to me what's going to happen. But this model of the socios having an involvement and all that, right now is under heavy scrutiny, definitely, because the club has proven that financially they haven't been able to structure a team that is solid, robust, and all this side they had in 2008 with Begiristain, with Guardiola, with basically all the biggest intellectual talent in football, with Ferran Soriano running the finances and all that, is gone. And Joan Laporta hasn't created a structure just to revert the situation. Ferran Reverter was his CEO after he won the elections. He left after a couple of months because he didn't like what he saw. Matteo Alemany, the best sporting director in Spain, apart from Monchi, left as well. Now they've got Deco. So financial issues, intellectual talent has gone, and I think the squad is not as good as you say, Jimbo.
Okay.
With all due respect, I can think of so many stars of Barcelona in the past, and Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, Juli, Samuel Eto'o, that would start tomorrow for Barcelona. Because João Félix, Ferran Torres, Lewandowski, who is 35, these are players that are either in a turning point in their career, they can become better, but they have to do it now, tomorrow, João Félix, Ferran Torres being those, and Robert Lewandowski is in the twilight of his career.
Okay, well, it's looking very delicate then. Just 2 points ahead of Athletic Club de Bilbao in fifth spot. Elsewhere, Girona stayed top. They beat Rafa Benitez's Celta Vigo 1-0. They're now unbeaten in 14 matches, the leaders. But they're only 1 point ahead, is it, of Real Madrid, who have that game in hand?
Yeah, they are playing their game in hand, Real Madrid, in midweek.
Oh, are they?
Against Getafe. By the way, Bordalás, Getafe manager, hasn't lost at home since he took over for his second time. So I don't think that it's going to be easy for Real Madrid to travel at the Coliseum.
Big derby, yeah?
Yeah. Atletico Madrid, another Madrid side, they are ahead of Barcelona on goal difference after a 2-0 win over Valencia, getting their revenge on Valencia for that early season defeat.
Talking about skills over the overhead kick, did you see the Memphis Depay?
Oh, yeah.
The one that obviously didn't score, he scored one, but the one where he flicks the ball over the defender with his heel, go around, and then volleys it. Oh, my.
Well, that game was spectacular. Memphis one was beautiful. Suarez did one like this to Benatia, I remember, one dribbling like this. But what about Koke's pass to Nahuel Molina in Memphis goal? That was astonishing.
Lovely.
As well.
What about Camavinga's pass to Vinny for the first
another day? One. Lovely. Well, because Camavinga is really good, and it's a real shame that Ancelotti uses him sometimes as a left back. Because Camavinga in the midfield, he could, I don't know if pull the strings, because he's not this kind of player, but you just have to give him the ball and make sure that you know, you rely on him. Sometimes he looks like he's going to lose the ball, but he never loses the ball. And physically, he is capable of reaching everywhere. He's like an octopus, really, just getting the ball from everyone. He's an unbelievable player. But on Atletico de Madrid's game, Antoine Griezmann's pass to Samuel Lino as well, another astonishing pass. Atletico de Madrid has a lot of quality. They have recorded 3 clean sheets in a row, which is good because they were conceding many goals, and Inter is looming in the horizon.
It is indeed.
No,
we'll talk about
Morata.
He's going to be fine for Sunday. He should be fine.
We'll talk about Inter very, very shortly because they've got a big weekend ahead of them.
Sí.
Derby d'Italia with Juventus.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Alvaro, you've got one more thing to say about La Liga.
One of the greatest midfielders of La Liga of this century is living, Ivan Rakitic. He won 4 league titles, multiple titles for Sevilla as well. He was instrumental for Barcelona. He managed to replace Xavi better than anybody else, better than André Gómez, Arturo Vidal, Paulinho, right, and all the footballers that
so
came to Barcelona.
So he's quit now? He's not going to finish the season?
He's leaving now to Al-Shabaab in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Ah, right. He's, right. Okay, leaving.
You said he replaced Xavi better than anyone.
Ooh. Yeah.
Could he be the next coach of Barcelona? Okay. No.
I'm going to move on from La Liga now. But, right, he's gone to heading east. Okay, now, Serie A. Monday night, top story. Roma won their second straight game under De Rossi. Yay! 2-1 at Salernitana.
Mm-hmm.
They're now 1 point off the top four. Admittedly, it's been an easy start. A couple of relegation strugglers for opponents, but...
And they were in Saudi Arabia last week to play Al-Shabaab, Rakitic's new club. Yeah, which they'd organised because their sponsor is Riyadh Season. And... You know, I imagine that this was a condition of it. I imagine that, you know, Jose Mourinho being coach of Roma was probably a condition of it as well. He's no longer. But yeah, De Rossi, I mean, when they brought him in, there was some thinking about the timing of the season in that he would have quite a lot of training sessions. They'd have a soft start, Hellas Verona, Salernitana. Both games kind of mirror images of one another in terms of they go 2-0 up and then they kind of creak a little and their opponents come back into the game. It's quite nervous. But yeah, they are all of a sudden fifth.
Mm.
And the only condition of De Rossi's contract was a Champions League bonus. Nothing else. No automatic extension if he does well. At the moment, they are on course to qualify for the Champions League, although Atalanta keep winning as well. All the other teams have a game in hand
them. Yeah. So next five teams, yeah. Roma next Monday again for them next weekend. They're going to be hosting Cagliari, with another former Roma glory.
Yeah,
Claudio Ranieri.
Claudio was Daniele's last coach at Roma. Oh. I was at De Rossi's final game, which was also Claudio's final game.
Right.
And it's the one where Claudio cries on the sidelines because of because he came at a time of need for the club and his people recognised what he'd done for them. It was lovely.
That is gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now, as you say, after that, Inter we keep mentioning because they've got the Derby d'Italia coming up this weekend. Now, it's going to see them hosting Juventus. They're hosting Juventus this time around. Juve, who come into this game of games off the back of a bit of a slip-up. They'd had 7 straight wins. This weekend, they took on a side who were second bottom of the table, Empoli. But the twist was that Empoli have recently appointed... The Harry Houdini of Serie A. Davide Nicola, who you remember from his incredible Crotone turnaround and then rescuing Salernitana himself a few seasons back. What does he do? Well, the first game he won 3-0 against Monza, was their first victory since November. Yeah. And this time he went and got a point away in Turin.
Baldanzi al limite, carica il destro tiro, rete splendida di Baldanzi, che pareggia per l'Empoli, una rasoiata.
So 4 points from 6 for Nicola, who, yeah, he's changed Empoli's style. Empoli have always been a club that plays like a 4-4-2 diamond, you know, Sadi, Giampaolo, people like that. He's like, no, let's go 3 at the back, shore things up. And okay, in Turin against Juventus, they were favoured by the fact that Arkadiusz Milik got sent off after 15 minutes. So they had a man advantage for more than an hour. They went behind, but they were still plucky enough to get back into the game. They brought on one of the most promising players, or shall we say overhyped young players in Italian football, which is Tommaso Baldanzi. Baldanzi scored from outside of the area. It's the only way to score against Juventus. I think more than half of the 14 goals that they've conceded this season have come from shots outside the box. So credit to Empoli for pulling themselves out or getting closer to getting out of the relegation mire. But for Juve, yeah, it was a blow, James. Allegri sort of criticised after the game for some of the lineup choices that he made. For example, for starting Milik over Yildiz, who's been in great form over the last few months. He rested Danilo because Danilo was on a booking and he didn't want to lose Danilo for the Derby d'Italia, which is coming up. I think they were still without Rabiot and Chiesa. But they would have expected to win that game against Empoli. So it allowed Inter to take back the summit of Serie A and still have that game in hand the Derby d'Italia on Sunday.
So when do they play Empoli, though? That's the key question.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I suppose with Inter, I mean, Juventus, Empoli have strangely become a bit of a bogey team. And remember, towards the end of last season, Empoli wiped the floor with Juventus. It was on the day when they got their points penalty back. And so Juventus' heads were all over the place. Inter's bogey team tends to be, you know, a Genoa or a Bologna or a Sassuolo. So let's see. But Inter, not as impressive as they've been all season when they went to Florence at the weekend, but they got the job done.
Right. Lautaro scoring. Just as Vlahovic had been the scorer for Juventus in their game against Empoli. The two in-form forwards in Serie A clashing then at San Siro this weekend. But by the way, just talking of Empoli still, they've got Salernitana, so that's the bottom two face each other next weekend. Pippo against... Nicola, if you're struggling to place him, he's the guy who looks kind of like Luka Modric's dad. If Luka Modric's dad was a kind of grizzled veteran who'd hit hard times, but spent too much time working in the fields or something. I don't know.
They've got the same hair in Zaghi and Davide Nicola. And I always think it's interesting. These guys have been in charge of teams that are down the bottom. Nicola's been fighting relegation his entire career. So he's gone grey. He looks quite haggard now. He looks like he'd be carrying a staff in a Lord of the Rings kind of film, something like that. You contrast Pippo Inzaghi with his brother, Simone. Simone still has jet black hair.
Baby face. Yeah. Plump cheeks.
Pippo now is a mess. Streaked grey. Yeah. Pippo's a mess. He's not a mess, but his hair is streaked with grey.
Yeah.
You can tell, you know, he doesn't find management as easy as he did find scoring goals.
Yeah.
So
It's not as easy to manage Salernitana than it is to manage Inter.
Well, he's had the bigger clubs. He was at Milan.
No, he had his chance.
I mean, if you talk about being delegitimized by the by the president, that scene where Berlusconi flanks him in the dressing room and says, "Pippo, you need to be stronger with your players. Shout at them." So Pippo goes, "Hey, forza ragazzi." You know? But it's because not like that. Like this, he does it. And he's, "No, you go again." "No, no, louder, louder." Bullying on a level that rarely, rarely seen.
Yeah. In the same scene, I mean, that was preceded by Berlusconi, I think, propositioning or asking Suleiman Tari how his wife is. Because I think Silvio quite liked Mrs. Montari. So anyway.
Yeah, what a... Che tipo. Anyway, so that's Salernitana Empoli. But we have the big game at San Siro. And key for the title?
Maybe not key, because there's still, there'll be 15 games to go afterwards. But as I mentioned, Inter have been able to take back the lead in Serie A with a game in hand. If they were to win this, or even get kind of a favourable draw, they would have the edge on head-to-head, which is essentially worth an extra point as well. So it is big. It's probably the biggest Derby d'Italia since Sarri against Conte, when Sarri came out on top in COVID. But yeah, it should be a great game. I mean, it was the last Derby d'Italia really kind of caught fire after about 20 minutes. Juventus took the lead in that, and then Inter scored, replied almost immediately with a wonderful goal down the right-hand side. We'll have to see if Chiesa's back fit, although even a fit Chiesa, I'm not sure he gets into this side with Yildiz playing as well as he did. Even when Yildiz came on against Empoli, you were kind of saying, "Max, what have you done here? Why didn't you play him earlier?" We'll have to see if Inter wear orange again. This was a nice.
Big talking point.
It was an actual question. Yeah. So in Italy, generally at the moment, you have Sinner mania, like right. Yannick Sinner. Even before he won the Australian Open, when he reached the final of the ATP thing in Turin, again, like every question to an Italian coach or an Italian player was, "Are you Sinner? Are you Djokovic?" and this sort of thing, and this. Yeah, on Saturday in Allegri's pre-match press conference, he was asked, you know, who is Sinner and Djokovic out of Inter and Juventus? And he said, I think we're younger, so we're Sinner. Mm. I'm not going to talk about Inter because they're quite prickly and all this sort of thing. And then after Inter won in Florence, they wore orange. And Simone Inzaghi, legitimate question, did you wear orange to draw inspiration from the red-haired Yannick Sinner? There was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek in there, but it was kind of like, oh my God, this is, it's reached levels that poor Yannick Sinner could never have imagined.
Indeed not.
So, who does he support, do we know?
AC Milan.
Oh, okay. There you go. Mentioning AC Milan, they had a 2-2 draw with Bologna, Thiago Motta's Bologna this weekend. Two goals from Ruben Loftus-Cheek, two penalty misses, one from Olivier Giroud and one from Teo Hernandez.
Yeah.
In first, a weekend that saw five penalties missed in Serie A. That's the most, because I know you care, the most in a single round of games since 1960.
Wow.
That's mad.
First time a team had missed two penalties in a game in a decade.
Really?
But you mentioned Ruben, Loftus-Cheek. Ruben's had a fantastic start to the year. Can't remember how many goals he scored, but I think it's 4 or 5 since Serie A came back. And Stefano Pioli, after the game, was talking about him and said, look, I've been fortunate to coach some really good midfielders in my time, particularly those who sort of bomb on and start scoring goals. And yeah, he sort of compared Loftus-Cheek to Milinkovic-Savic, you know, someone who's been Serie A midfielder of the year twice, now playing in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, you do wonder, ahead of the Euros, does Ruben start to get more of a look in for England? Because certainly he's playing as though there's a major tournament coming up.
Right. Same way Tomori's been a regular for Southgate ever since.
Exactly. Okay. I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Four
when
goals.
Milan and New English.
Yeah.
But
four goals in four Serie A matches, as you say.
To be fair to Southgate, he has started calling up and playing Tomori this season. It's better than not playing or not calling him up at all.
So it depends on Henderson, right? Playing for Ajax or not.
Ajax legend.
No, thank you.
Jules, a lot of pushback from listeners. When you called Hendo into question, the man with
really?
The extraordinary palmares, you know, I think you have to respect
the palmares.
The achievements.
So palmares now makes you a good player.
Well, I think it's not coincidence if you are involved in that many triumphs.
Yeah.
And so many triumphs against adversity.
How did Henderson get on this weekend?
Yeah.
How did he get
it? He didn't play, right?
No,
he didn't play.
Didn't play.
But great palmares.
Great palmares.
He needs to improve before playing.
There you go. Hey, Jules, I can see you're interested to tell us all about Ligue 1. So we'll just, you know, part the fact that it's a huge weekend in Serie A coming up.
One last thing, James, which was, remember last weekend was marred by the racist abuse from Mike Maignan, the Milan goalkeeper. A couple of things happened this weekend in a sort of AC Milan in the 16th minute. His number is number 16. They stopped the play in their game against Bologna and sort of did something to show their support of Maignan and also that they are anti-racism, anti-discrimination. And then Udinese, the mayor of Udinese, you might remember, he said, we're going to give Maignan honorary citizenship. And then this went before a vote in the town council, and the town council voted it down. because Udine is not a racist city, as they were very keen to point out. And I know this does not necessarily represent Udine or people from Udine. It's more reflective of the politics of the centre-right party that voted this down. But in terms of like just a beffa, as they say in Italy, just like... you know, sort of face palm moment. This is right up there.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Ligue 1.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
À l'entrée de la surface de réparation, Satriano au premier poteau. Oh, qu'il est beau! Oh, qu'il est beau ce but de la part de Pereira Lage. On appellera ça une manière, non, on appellera ça une Pereira Lage.
Ooh, nervous times in Paris, Jules, at PSG's lead cut to just 6 points.
What?
After their 2-2 draw with Brest this weekend. What happened, Jules?
Great
they
game.
They were 2-0 up, they were cruising.
They were cruising and then they fell asleep. They went for a nap like some of us do, you know, especially after skiing.
Maybe the handball's on.
Maybe the handball's on, you know. So they fell asleep at halftime and just didn't wake up again because the first half, without being brilliant, Asensio scored a lovely goal. Bobby Bacala was good on the left-hand side before he got sent off in the second half.
Yeah.
And then at halftime, everything changed. Brest, to be fair, were a really good team. We said that. Just you haven't made a joke yet, which I'm a bit worried. Came back and scored 2 goals to level the
it
second
all
one.
Tits up for PSG.
I think Horncastle used also that on Sunday night.
Did you do that on Sunday night?
Yeah,
when we were coming through the airport terminal.
Yeah. He did, and Brest scored a lovely, lovely second goal. Pereira Lage, if you haven't seen it, like a back heel after Satriano's cross. And they deserved their draw, to be fair. They took their chance. They want to be more aggressive. They won all the second balls. And PSG could not respond, which I'm a bit disappointed in the Luis Enrique point of view because he didn't look like he did enough to influence that game and saw how apathetic his players were. So we see what I love about this is, but we mentioned Eric Roy, the Brest manager before. His last job as a manager was 11 years ago. And in a weekend where we talked a lot about Klopp and Xavi and managers. Or Mazzari. not because he didn't want to. I think he wanted to do other things. So he went a sporting director. He was a TV pundit, including with me. He created a tournament for beach football. Mm-hmm. Is that beach football, you say?
Wow.
Things like that. And then he applied for this job. And I think Brest, in a way, deserves a lot of credit for thinking outside of the box, clearly, 11 years outside of the box, to give him the job when they had other managers applying who had a better career, in a way, or certainly more recently. But they saw in Eric Roy someone who is good tactically because he watched a lot of football. He's very good in managing players. He's a really, really smart guy too. And they're third in the table and they completely deserve to be where they are.
Top of the form table as well.
Yeah,
In terms of managing big personalities, did he learn that from being on the radio with you, Jules?
TV, we were together.
TV?
Mostly,
okay.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
What show did you do, Jules?
We covered the Premier League together
for
French television. Yeah, it was great. And you could see that the way he watched the game was a bit special. But I don't think even him could have foreseen how successful it would be in this team. It's still a small team. And by the way, they go back to the Parc des Princes in 2 weeks' time to play PSG, or 10 days' time to play them in the Cup. So that should be interesting.
Okay. And while all that was happening, Nice closed the gap on the leaders to, as I mentioned, 6 points with their 1-0 win over Metz on Saturday. Guess who they'll be playing next week?
PSG?
No.
Brest,
that's it. It's second and third.
Second and third.
Which way around is it, though?
It's Brest-Nice. But if you look at the table, it's PSG, nice press. Anyway, Marseille and Monaco played one of the biggest games for Marseille this weekend.
It was big, and they were disappointing in a way because they drew 2-2 when Monaco went down to 10 men after 11 minutes. A really harsh red card. That referee is a terrible, one of the worst we've had. I don't know why they picked him for such a big game and a big derby as well. And even playing 11 against 10 for 80-odd minutes, Marseille couldn't win.
And it's not like they haven't had the practice. Producer Charlie coming up with the stat that they have spent more time playing with a man advantage than any other team in Ligue 1 this season. Yeah. But they've only won one of the four games in which they've had that advantage.
Yeah, and Rino Gattuso saying he was not too angry, to be fair. He said, like, I can't have asked more for my players. What about asking them to win, maybe?
The Vitinha miss at the end.
Vitinha is a very interesting one because they're trying to sell him. He might go to Genoa on loan with an option to buy or obligation to buy. The most expensive ever Marseille signing, 32 million bonus included from Braga, who just never clicked. And I think there's a player there, but for some reason, it's there. And as we know, it's a difficult environment in Marseille.
Vitinha doesn't fit in, yeah.
Doesn't fit in now. Yeah. And he's obviously bad Vitinha because good Vitinha in Paris is doing much better. Mm. He had the chance to win it.
Good save,
he
though.
Did it. Good save. Really, really good save. And for Monaco and Adi Hutto, who's been a bit under pressure in everything that's happening within the club, selling all of that, that's a good draw because they even finished the game with 9 men because Zakaria was also sent off. But Wissam Benye there, we talked about him a lot before. What a player. Even at that age, off contract in the summer, scores one, assists the other one. He's just a lovely, lovely player.
How are Monaco doing in their search for a new owner?
We don't know much more. I think they're still the Rain Group, the bank that sold, is very usually involved in those kind of stuff, is doing all the preparation work and everything. So we should know a bit more like in the next 6 months or so.
All right. Anything else from Ligue 1, Jules?
Yeah, just a shout out to Ayoub Bouadi, who at 16 and 188 days became the youngest player to start in the French top flight since Basile Boli in 83. Only the third player born in 2007 to play in the V5 league, the other two being Lamine Yamal and Pau Cubarsí at Barcelona.
Good God.
And he got sent off, bless him. Yeah, towards the end. So he became the youngest player to be sent off. He got back-to-back yellow cards in the space of like 5 minutes or so. He's eager. He's a genuine wonder kid. I mean, he's outstanding.
Where does he play?
Defensive midfielder, like a 6 or 8.
For who?
For Lille. Lille. And they drew 0-0 away at Montpellier. And it's a shame because it was such a big... clearly, it was a big game. And he did okay until the red card. And that red card will forever be, obviously, remembered as the youngest ever player, I think, to be sent off in the French top flight.
Yeah.
One of the quickest?
Not the quickest, because he got sent off just before the break. So he still had 45 minutes. It spoiled the party a little bit when you're 16 and making your pro debut. But I'm sure he'll learn from it.
All right, Jules. Well, very shortly, we'll catch up with our pal, Raphael Honigstein. He's got a moment of the week for us, and he's got a lot to talk about Klopp and what happened to Bayern this weekend in the Bundesliga title race. Before that, though, the Totally Football Show is sponsored by Google Pixel. And Nice this weekend managed to close the gap on leaders PSG. Nice, of course, were the home of Ross Barkley last season, who Kiva O'Neill has made the subject of the latest Beyond the Frame.
Beyond the Frame with Google Pixel.
Everything you're about to hear has been recorded using Google Pixel's Audio Magic Eraser tool. That means that instead of our journalists' audio being drowned out by the crowd, the audio sounds just the way the journalist you're about to hear wants you to. You'll hear them loud and clear thanks to Audio Magic Eraser removing distracting sounds in Beyond the Frame.
Requires Google Photos app. May not work on all images or all audio elements.
A moment missed from today's game will be the performance of Ross Barkley yet again. Pulling strings in the midfield for Luton. He's been a vital signing when he joined the club last summer. He's been incredible in the Premier League. Slowly but surely, he's got up to probably his best form in a long time. And he's a player who is very important to this Luton team and someone they're really going to need going into these final months of the season. It wasn't the warmest reception for him at Goodison Park, but yeah, he put in another one of those senior displays, one of experience, and it really helped Luton. He wasn't actually on the pitch when they scored the winner, but he was on it after full time and looked pretty happy with what Luton had managed to do, because I think as well it felt like an important psychological boost over Everton, who, of course, they're battling down at the bottom of the table. So, yeah, Everton out of the FA Cup, Luton's through, and Ross Barkley, again, one of the key players for Luton.
Beyond the Frame with Google Pixel.
Okay, time to catch up with our buddy Raphael Honigstein. He's on his way to Austria. He travels. He gets
again?
Around. No,
no, that's king.
Work.
Okay.
Football needs him.
Yeah.
And Rafa is there. But first, he's with us. Here he is now. Hey, Rafa. Rafa, let's begin with what is your moment of the week?
Well, James, there were so many big moments this weekend, on and off the pitch, as it were. But in terms of the overall importance, I think it might be the challenge on Jeremy Frimpong by Florian Neuhaus of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Frimpong threw on goal, and Neuhaus, who you don't have down as the fastest player in the world, certainly not when it comes to keeping up with Frimpong, makes up the ground and puts in a challenge that denies Frimpong and Leverkusen the goal. And it turns out that Leverkusen only draw 0-0. And that might well be the challenge that ultimately, not decides, but has a big, big influence on the outcome of the title race in Germany.
Reopening, perhaps, the battle between Bayer and Bayern. Bayern, who moved to just 2 points behind Xavi Alonso's side. Of course, this happening just 24 hours after the Jurgen Klopp announcement on Merseyside, which I imagine fueled all sorts of speculation there in Germany.
Yeah, I mean, speculation about Xabi Alonso's future has been ripe now for a couple of months at the least, because he's so highly regarded. There's been talk about him, of course, going to Real Madrid, but Carlo Ancelotti has renewed his contract. Bayern keeps on getting linked with him in case Thomas Tuchel decides to leave or Bayern decide to part company with Tuchel. And of course, Liverpool, the third club he played for, very successfully, just an obvious destination. And I think that Alonso will be at the very top of the list because he can do things that very few candidates are able to do, which is to combine the clear expertise that he's shown already as a coach with the kind of charisma and personality that I think you need if you are to be successful at a place like Liverpool. And that's why I think Leverkusen will do really, really well to hold on to him.
What are the assumptions in Germany about what Jurgen Klopp's going to be doing next?
I think everyone feels that it's just a matter of time before he'll take over the German national team. Will it be straight after the Euros? Will it be next year? That still gives him enough time to play the qualifiers for the World Cup with Germany. I think there's a clear pathway emerging for Klopp. The only problem, if you will, is that the German FA are trying not to make this too much of a topic before the Euros, because you've still got Nagelsmann, of course, very much in charge, and a danger that things might overshadow that campaign. So I guess the logical thing to do would be either announce it quite early, if indeed Klopp wants to do that, or of course try to pretend that this is not going on and not common. But I think the pressure on the FA to appoint Klopp, or at least to, you know, start serious negotiations with him, will be quite immense, because the whole of Germany want Klopp to take over.
Well, returning to the Bundesliga then, goalless for Bayer Leverkusen against Mönchengladbach, despite having 28 shots, 20 of them off target, 69 touches as well in the Gladbach area, a record for a Bundesliga side, or at least since they started collecting that data. So, yeah, and just an unfortunate afternoon?
Well, some people have tried to read a lot into it, saying that Leverkusen now beginning to feel the pressure and maybe start worrying about slipping up in the title race, not playing with the same kind of freedom that we've seen before. But they struggled in the last two games and found a way, and we all hailed that as a triumph, and they could have so easily found a goal. I don't think that Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso would be overly perturbed by dropping a point against Gladbach. That's the sort of thing that can happen. And of course, they can make amends for that quite soon, because in 10 days' time, just over 10 days' time, they're playing Bayern at home. And what will prove to be a hugely, hugely exciting game, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Bayern Munich this weekend, after beating Union midweek in their game in hand, moving to just 2 points behind Bayer with that 3-2 win against Augsburg. Harry Kane with the third goal.
Mit dem linken Fuß versucht Harry Kane zu finden, dann ist Musiala da, Kane mit dem Abpraller und Tor! Aber wieder Kane! Tor für den FC Bayern München!
Das ist 23rd in 19 Bundesliga matches. Am I right in saying he now needs 18 from the reigning 15 to break Lewandowski's record? Or one that before Lewandowski had stood for, what, 40 years or so?
Yeah, he needs 42 goals to break the record of Lewandowski, 41 to equal them.
Okay, so it's 19 from the remaining 15. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Any notes on Bayern's performance?
It was okay, I guess. Bayern had huge problems at the back. They started with a back four of Davies, De Ligt, Eric Dier and Guerrero on the right. So you'd expect them to have a few wobbles, especially because the pitch was quite wobbly. In the words of Leon Goretzka, not the sort of ground where you can play decent football. And Bayern also, again, gave away a couple of sloppy penalties. Manuel Neuer making amends for it by saving the first one, but then Müller made a mistake to allow Augsburg in a few nervy minutes towards the end. But yeah, ultimately sort of regulation, unglamorous, box-ticked kind of performance. And now that lead from Leverkusen just down to 2 points.
Indeed. Also moving up in the Bundesliga are Borussia Dortmund, who got their third victory in a row. They defeated their Ruhr rivals Bochum 3-1 with a Füllkrug hat-trick. Two penalties in there. And with Stuttgart absolutely destroying RB Leipzig 5-2, that sees Dortmund moving past RB Leipzig into the top four again. And that 5-2 in Stuttgart, third versus fourth, former Brighton striker Dennis Undav continuing his exceptional form this season.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing performance from him, from the whole Stuttgart team. Of course, he caught the eye with that hat-trick. Good timing as well, because he's pushing for a place in the Germany squad, of course, for the Euros. The more he can do that sort of thing, the better his chances. But yeah, Stuttgart were once again really impressive. Leipzig, even when they're not quite at their best, which is the case at the moment, a formidable opponent, tough to beat. And yet they made it look very, very easy. Goal of the game, probably though, scored by Lois Openda. A really wonderful curled little effort. But Leipzig in a bit of a crisis, James. Three straight defeats since the winter break. And of course, before that, they drew against Bremen. So four games without a win. And that explains their dip in the table and will make for a bit of an uncomfortable, I think, spell for Marco Rosa, who, up until now, I think had been probably ahead of expectations. But now maybe that, big loss of big characters that they've had to suffer in the summer is beginning to catch up with them.
All right then. Rafa, thank you so much for being with us. Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you, James. Ciao.
Raphael Honigstein there.
Good.
Looking forward to seeing him again next week.
Yeah. Yeah, or will Splendid. He be in Germany or in...
I don't know.
Poland?
Who can say?
We don't know with him.
We don't know.
International man of mystery, yes. Raphael Honigstein.
That's right.
Indeed. That wraps it up, though, for today's show, I believe. Many thanks to Rafa for that, to you, Jules, Alvaro, James, Rachel and Charlie in the booth, and you, listener. We'll be around if you want some more. Thursday, we're back talking about midweek Premier League stuff, which, yeah, that'll be fun.
Good.
Join us for that. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.